So as you know, there's been 2-3 weeks now of headline-generating news coming out of the investigative news department at Global and the Globe and Mail. Now, before I go any further, Han Dong, the former Liberal MP, now independent MP, whose name came up as part of this reporting, and it was alleged that he was the target of a CSIS operation and all the rest of that stuff. He has announced today that he is filing a lawsuit against Global News and Corus Entertainment. So we'll see where that goes. He'd said he was going to do that. And now he did release a statement today saying that that is his plan. Now, at the center of all this reporting and everything that's been going on are national intelligence documents and anonymous sources. And that generates another area of concern on top of what those documents and sources have been alleging. Who's leaking this intelligence to the media and why? Why are they going this route? Questions that themselves are now going to be the subject of multiple investigations too. And joining us to chat about that is Andrew Kirsch, a former intelligence officer with CSIS, also an author of I Was Never Here. So Andrew, thank you so much for joining us. I do appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Yeah, you've been pretty vocal on social media asking some questions that I think a lot of people have been asking. To start, the whistleblower or the leaker or whatever we're going to designate him as or her as, is this the wrong way to go in your mind, going to the media as an anonymous source and leaking of the documents?
Well, look, I classify them as a leaker, and I think this is the wrong way to go in a sense of leaking classified sensitive information is incredibly damaging and harmful to our national security efforts. I mean, we, as a former intelligence officer with CSIS, I promised confidentiality to my informants. We share information with our partners, receive information from our partners that we, you know, are trying to protect and keep confidential. And so when that gets out, that's a bad look. We lose trust in our sources and our allies. And so I'm hypersensitive to leaking. Now, I understand why we are reporting on this. I understand that journalists are doing what they're doing, but I had some real problems with leaking. And I think that, you know, this is a case of a leaker, not a whistleblower. I mean, they are reporting on sensitive information that was passed along, that was written in reports and distributed widely. It was not uncovering wrongdoing at the agencies, at CSIS, or, that information was not being sent out. It was. It was just this person felt like people were not acting on it. And I think that's a different conversation than, you know, were the intelligence agencies doing their job and did they have the right information?
Yeah, a couple of things you talk about. I think you make a really good distinction in terms of, is he a whistleblower? Is he a leaker? Because we have whistleblower protections in this country, but not when it comes to national intelligence. CSIS does not afford the same protection to somebody like this. They have broken the law with what's gone on here. Should that be changed? Or it sounds to me like you think, no, that makes really, really good sense when we're talking about issues of national intelligence.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer, and so I don't want to get too in the weeds.
Yeah,
I
yeah, yeah.
wrote a book, but I did write a book. You know, I worked for CSIS for around a decade, and I wrote my memoir, I Was Never Here, which is about my experience working for CSIS. And I was very aware of my obligations under the Security of Information Act, what I was and was not allowed to say. You know, that obviously is limiting when I talk about my career and things I did and things I learned. That's clearly spelled out. Respect that and made sure that nothing I wrote would jeopardize any investigations I was a part of or that are ongoing. I think whistleblowers, where there is in the public interest, where you are uncovering wrongdoing, you know, those are separate from just kind of dumping classified documents on because you think more people should see it, right? I think that is different in my mind, and I'll let the lawyers decide legally what that classification is.
Exactly. Yeah, they'll figure that out. But and as you mentioned, the defense here is, well, listen, we did what we were supposed to do. We did pass it along to the appropriate people and, you know, offices that need to look at this sort of thing, and nobody did anything about it. And I thought it was so important and so much in the national interest that people needed to know about this. Do you have to put any credence in that? I mean, what else was he supposed to do or she's supposed to do?
Well, you know, I talked about this a little bit online, but there are other ways. I mean, you can resign. I don't know who this person is or their role and what they had access to. But certainly if they were to resign, appoint a principal, if they were a senior public servant and say, you know, from information that's available publicly, there have been reports. We saw in Tsakop redacted reports, but CSIS itself releases a public report in 2020 that said foreign interference is a serious problem. And Tsakop overviews CSIS and wrote a report with recommendations saying you know, the government needs to look into this. This is a pressing issue. And we know that, or we don't believe the government has done much to address it. So I think you can make a pretty, you know, a good case on information that's publicly available if you are a certain level and say, I'm resigning this because I think it was not handled appropriately. And you can run for office. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be a decision maker. You can say that this is an issue that's important to me, and I think we need to put it on the radar. I just feel like leaking documents, selective documents that could injure our national security is not, you know, the right way or the best way to do it. When we have this information that we can use to make a pretty strong case that, you know, more should have been done, and to ask the questions about, you know, who saw this information and was their response appropriate? Because I think ultimately that's the question we need to ask.
Yes.
Which is, okay, well, you know, who got this information, and what do they do with it? And let's judge them on that. And I think we had enough information that said these were widely circulated. These went different people, and, you know, what happened and what didn't happen and why.
You mentioned, and I think it's a really important point that we need to take a look at. I mean, we had U.S. President Joe Biden in the country just last week. I'm sure they discussed this situation, and we know there's questions about the way our allies are looking at the way we're handling our relationship with China from start to finish. And there's a lot of people that think our allies are not at all impressed with it. So something like this, how does this not only our national reputation, but the reputation of our intelligence service, when something like this is happening, what do our allies think when they look at it?
Well, it's always a concern. We're not alone in having issues that have come up where information's gotten out. I think in this case, it's our own information. So they're probably, you know, it wasn't as though, as far as I know, foreign information or intelligence that was collected by our partners was released. This was our own that got out. It's not a great look. You don't like to see it, especially since it's just, you know, hasn't stopped. It's still going. So I think it's a concern about what else is coming down the road. But you know, all intelligence services have had issues, so there's some understanding there. But it's not great. And we've traditionally had a pretty good reputation. We'd like to continue because, you know, we do receive a lot of, intelligence from our partners. We're a smaller player, on the world stage. We're obviously next to the U.S., U.K., Australia, and the Five Eyes community, New Zealand. We want to make sure that we kind of honor our obligations in that relationship.
What should be done, Andrew, in this particular, is there, and I guess the question I'm asking in your mind, is there something that does rise to the level of, oh, to hell with the reputation and with the procedure, and this is so important that he's done the right thing? Or, like you say, there is other things that he could have done. You know, is there an instance where it does make sense for an intelligence professional to say, you know what, this is so important to the national interest and it's not being handled properly that I'm going to take it into my own hands? Should that ever happen?
Well, I get that I come at this from a perspective of a practitioner who has been on the side of yeah. keeping the secrets and being out there, right? So obviously, when we're talking about this in the public, you know, I feel an obligation to raise the concern that when we leak information, there is a risk and a threat to our national security. That does not have no consequences. I'm sorry how many negatives I could put in one sentence, but there are consequences when we let this get out. And I think the argument on the other side is that, yeah, this is raised an important conversation that clearly there's something that we need to be doing here, and we're having a debate about what that is, a rapporteur or a public inquiry. I get very uncomfortable when people make those decisions for themselves, right? That this one person has decided that I think this is important, I'm going to leak it, and I'm going to hope for the best. And the reason we have these laws is to take that out of individuals' hands, that we have channels where information goes through. So you can't just say, oh, I think this report is important, and I don't think the right people have done anything, so I'm just going to, you know, shoot this out on social media. So as much as in this case, if people might feel that this is great and good and a good conversation has happened, I don't think we want to have a habit of our intelligence service or people who work in national right. security just kind of feeling like they're able to dump stuff. And, you know, that's the broader concern
it
that
is.
Maybe sometimes can get lost in the conversation if we think it's a positive one.
You're absolutely right. I mean, the rules are in place for a reason. And if you start saying, well, but in this case, maybe, then you start why have the rules? And there's all kinds of issues that arise.
Well, I know better. And that's that kind of ingrained in all of us. It's we have proper channels. We pass it up. And as public servants, which, you know, our job is to collect and advise, right? CSIS's mandate is to collect, analyze, and advise government threats to national security, and the governments make the decisions. And if sometimes you can get frustrated, absolutely. And that is just kind of a challenge of the role. And if you want to be a decider, you kind of have to get in the decider business rather than the collector and advising business. And I think that's where this has gotten a little murky. And I said, from my perspective, that's just something I want to remind people.
Yeah.
I know that we're getting very excited about this is great. We're having an important conversation. I agree. You know, I was in the national security. I was collecting and advising on these types of threats. So I think they are important and dedicated 10 years of my life to it. Just as I said, I feel for my former colleagues who are probably now back at their desk doing a bit of damage control, trying to figure out, okay,
what's next?
And how does this affect our sources and our methods?
Andrew, I think they're all excellent points, and I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much, sir.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.